Jim, welcome to Lake Effect. It's such a pleasure to have you here this morning.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Yeah, you're back to visit your alma mater.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it like being back in Milwaukee?
Well, I said I got off the plane and I knew I was in Wisconsin when it was 32 degrees because I just came from a place where it was 80 degrees out. So, yeah, it's all sort of rushing back. I went, you know, visited the campus a little bit and saw the amazing Peck School that they built out there for the fine arts, and because I was a graduate in fine arts, and so it was really interesting to see the new facility that was built, which is unbelievable.
So it changed quite a bit since you were a student. Yeah.
Quite a bit. I mean, I don't know how big the Peck School is, but it's six floors, and it's I don't know how many tens of thousands of feet it is. But when I was going to school there, I remember, you know, I was took some film classes, and I remember our classes were in a what I would describe as a big closet down in the basement of Colton Hall, so tiny little space. And when I went to Peck School, I was just blown away because it was just the technology's all there, the equipment's there, and the space is there, and it's a really creative space that I saw, which the old school when I went there did not really have that. I mean, it was an art school, but it you know, there's just something to having these big open studio spaces, which makes it seem more creative and a lot more collaborative, because you'll have the you know, as we were touring parts of the fine arts department, we also heard guitars sort of playing down the hall, and I guess they have a world renowned guitar center, you know, so it was great.
When you were here, you were a painting and drawing major.
Right.
And what made you shift into the special effects? You know, were you thinking initially you were going to be a fine artist, you were going to be a painter?
Yeah. Well, actually, when I first started at UWM, I started in the School of Architecture. So I came in thinking I was going to be an architect. And as I went in the first year, and architecture was a great school, but I also took some art classes during that time, and I sort of, for what little bit of building there was in the art department, I sort of gravitated towards that aesthetic side of things. You know, just the more free-flowing creativity that was in the art department as opposed to architecture, which is a little more structured creativity, you know. So the first year I switched over to fine arts. And, yeah, exactly, expecting to go into painting and drawing or some sort of arts or, you know, the traditional arts that we know, because what I'm doing now didn't exist back then. You know, I think just like every other student, I wasn't quite sure where I was going to end up, but I sort of knew the things that I liked. And so I finished my bachelor's degree there, and the story I say is I had commitments to Carnegie Mellon on the East Coast and Otis Art Institute on the West Coast. And I remember driving out of Milwaukee, and my decision was basically I turned right, partly because it was warmer on the West Coast. And I think the month I left, it was minus 30 or something like that. So I was like, I'm going to go where it's warm. Again, I was gravitating towards the art, but I went to Otis, and it was a great school too. And it was at a time when computers were not quite in the home place, but they were starting to come out there.
So like early 80s?
Early 80s,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I bought one of the first Radio Shack. We call them the Trash 80s, the TRS 80s. And it was the first color computer. And so it had four colors. It had red, green, blue, and white. And black was a non-color, but it came for free. So it had these, you know, 64K, so really, you know, less than your
floppy
phone.
Disk,
floppy
no
disk,
hard drive,
less
yet.
Than your phone in terms of power and all that. But it sort of gave me the opportunity to sort of type around on the thing and sort of figure it out. And the reason I bought it is they were telling everybody at the time that these computers are coming out into our world. And within 5 years, we'll be servants to computers. And I sort of bought it out of fear to just realize what it was, you know? And so I realized—
Know your enemy?
No, I was going to know my enemy, right. And I realized within about 10 minutes that it was a piece of dumb sand and it was never going to do anything to me. So, but what it did do is get me interested in computers, which— you know, led me to, you know, a few months later, I would check the job boards at our school when I graduated, and there was a little 3x5 card that said, if you like computers and art, come see us. And it was one of the first computer graphics companies around. So that sort of got my initial steps into it, and then it just sort of went on from there.
And of course, since that time, in like 30, 35 years, it's changed so much what's been possible. I mean, special effects have been around as long as filmmaking has been around, but the kind of effects that you either created or do now are relatively new.
Yeah, that's sort of the cool part about it, is it never stops changing. You know, at one time I worked at this company called Boss Film. And we did everything with 35-millimeter film, and I was doing the digital side of that. But you could see that they've taken filmmaking to as far as it could go in terms of visual effects, because basically you had optical printers and a couple pieces of film, and all you could really do was just stack those pieces of film up. You know, you hit the technological wall at that point. And so what computers did is opened up that path again, you know, in terms of technology. And with computers now, I mean, it's sort of weird, but you can do anything. I don't think we still found out where we're going with it all, you know, but it's amazing every day. You know, when I was, in fact, the reel I was showing, I was sort of going through my old films, and one of the first films I did was The Last Starfighter. And I remember sitting there doing the work on The Last Starfighter and creating these spaceships and things. And I remember looking at it on the screen thinking, this is so weird. It's so real looking, and it's just on a screen. It doesn't exist anywhere. And even though I was doing it, you just couldn't fathom that it looked so real, you know. And so you'd spin it around and go, wow, there's highlights and reflections. And I looked at it yesterday, and it looks like the worst PlayStation game now I've ever seen. And how I ever thought that ever looked real was beyond me. But it's sort of interesting, because story I heard, there was when film first came out and they started showing it in theaters, there was a couple famous shots, and one of them was a Western film from when it was the early 1900s. And one of the bank robbers pointed a gun at the screen, at the camera, and I heard that the audience ran out of the theater because they thought they were going to get shot by this guy. You know, so I mean, because they weren't used to seeing that so much, and little by little, as they realized, oh, it's just a, you know, a piece of film and how it works. So the thought processes of the audience changes with every bit too. Like I said.
Well, as you're pushing the technology, you know, people start to expect more and more and more. And it's like you look back at the older things and think, oh, that looks really hinky.
Yeah, exactly.
But at the time, it was state of the art.
Exactly.
Has there ever been an effect that you were working on that you just couldn't get to work?
Yeah, well, again, I'll talk about the Lord of the Rings again. So there is this creature we were just talking about this morning, the Balrog. And the Balrog is this giant fiery creature that meets Gandalf at the bridge, and he stops him, basically. So back then, that type of effect, like water and fire simulation, was really, really difficult. It was computationally expensive. And so we hired this sort of specialist to create this computer graphic fire. You know, we bought tons of equipment for him so he could render quicker and all that. And so we put him away and said, here, make some fire for us, right? So we saw his first test. He had something to show you. And we showed this little, like, it was like a little matchstick sort of sitting in the space. And he lit it up, and the thing lit up, and it was just like a real fire. It looked absolutely real. And it had a little smoke trailing off, and it was all the intricacies were there. And I said, wow, that's fantastic. That looks beautiful, you know? And he says, yeah, it's simulated how you would create a real fire. So, you know, when you have real fire, you have oxygen and things that you need. So in the computer, he simulated all these things, and you have to have it in a certain pressure room, you know, and then you light it, and it would light like a real fire. Great. So we said, let's put it on the Balrog now, because it was just a little matchstick sort of looking thing. He said, let's put on the Balrog and light him up, right? So he had the Balrog sitting there, and we're looking at it, and it's like, great, he's on fire, and he looks absolutely real. And then he takes a step forward, and all the fire goes out. And we said, what happened? All the fire went out. He goes, well, yeah, it's a real fire. If you blow on it too fast, it'll go out, right? It's like, well, you know, the Balrog has to stay on fire the whole time. He says, okay, so I'll fix it. So the next day it took a long time. It was actually the next, like, week or so. And the clock was ticking, and we were getting closer to our deadline. he says, okay, I got the fire to stay on. So we saw the video of the Balrog now, and it was basically – it looked like blowtorches sort of shooting out of his, you know, pores. And when he walked, the blowtorches stayed on, but it was under such pressure that it wouldn't go out. And we're like, well, we can't do that, you know. So we at that point had to make a decision to sort of scrap that and find plan B, you know. So it was sort of –
So what did you end up doing to make it work?
So I went in my backyard – and I shot a little fire, like a little sterno thing, you know, at night. So you just had a little flame element. And we took that one element and you basically what you do is you create these things called sprites. So we made, you know, 50,000 sprites over the Balrog. And each sprite had these little flames on it. So you got the little detail of the fire, but you got the mass effect of all the flames, and so you could animate these things however you wanted them, and somebody pulled that off like in a month, and it looked really great, and so luckily it saved us, so I mean that's sort of the thinking you got to do. It's like you plan this one thing and you plan something to be really good, but you got to always sort of plan to scrap it if it's, you know, because you got to show something, you know,
right? It's got to work.
It's got to work. Yeah. So that was a the most memorable sort of hair-pulling experience, because we were like, I think, 2 months away at that time, and there was some intense shots that we needed to do.